I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today. 750 is an easy platform for discovering everything you need to find as a wholesale buyer of wine and spirits. The searches are easy to do, and they provide a wealth of information for you to determine exactly what you need to buy today. Pricing, size, characteristics, who the distributor is, the contact information, and even helpful features like easy startup of credit apps are all available for you, as well as a listing of tastings, which is something I refer to almost all the time to find out about the tastings in my neighborhood. I personally use the 750 service. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's extraordinarily helpful if you are a buyer of wine and spirits at the wholesale level. And I recommend that you waste no time in making it a part of your daily routine. 750.com, the 750 service, make it work for you. Elisabetta Fagioli of Montanitoli on the show today. Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. It's a beautiful day in New York today. It's perfect.
So you were born in Rome?
I was born in Rome, yes. Many years ago, I was born in Rome. In November, a beautiful day of November.
And your family was from the Verona area?
My family was from Verona, from an old family of teachers and professors, and they knew many languages. They were very cultured people.
But there was wine in the family as well?
Of course, of course. You know, wine is in people of Custoza, where they had a property and they had their own vineyards. It was very easy to make. You needed the bread and wine. That was the basics for life.
That was about 1944 that you were born.
No, I was born. Well, as a matter of fact, I am 18 years old. It's 37 years that I am 18 years old, because as it goes in Paris, a woman is always born at 40.
But what decade are we talking about? When were you living in Rome?
I was living in Rome. Well, there was a war, you know.
So it was the
So forest. I was born in Roma. Then we had to go to Verona. We had very, very difficult and tragic experiences during the war. Because, you know, the war was hitting very brutally Italy. And Verona was the right way of the canal for Germany to Italy. And so all the trains that went to Germany and passed through Verona were very strongly destroyed for the war. The Germans were there, and then came the Americans. And so I lived what was the war, really. And it was a very important experience. My father was taking Jews into Switzerland with his Red Cross car. And I remember the Nazis coming during the night to take him. It was very, 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 how do you say, touching experiences for a little girl.
Did you see him again?
Of course, he was a very triumphant, wonderful person, that he was always a winner. He has always been a winner during his life.
So he passed something on to you then?
Well, oh no, I am just a shadow of my father. I'm sorry.
What else was he like? Who was he like as a person?
He was a very cultured person. He was reading his Greek and his Latin very easily. He gave me the gospel in Greek and Latin. And so now my gospel is Greek and Latin. That's all I know about my gospel. It's very nice. It's very nice. He was a very, very smart person. Very smart. He tried to stop the war between France and Italy. He was very powerful too, but nobody knew how powerful he was. He was a very, how do you say, modest person. He didn't show a lot of himself. And he helped a lot of people. So he had a great sense of humanity and a great sense of sharing. And that's what we are want to do, and we want to go on in sharing, because our world is so small and we are so stupid. We don't understand that our life is very shortened. It makes no sense to battle each other for what? What is the sense? Just share a little glass of wine and all your problems will become very easily solved. This is my thought. And I would love to give a lot of wine to drink to all these Arabs that are so nasty now. Their problem is they don't drink wine. It's a tragedy. This is the main tragedy for them.
You studied art in Rome in your 20s.
Well, I studied art in Roma. I've always loved art. I loved music. I was very lucky because I had a very cultured milieu where I could live. And then I went in the Far East. I lived in Japan. I went 3 times in India visiting. And then I went 2 times in Cambodia visiting. That's why I ended up in Paris studying Cambodian art. Because Cambodia was once French, you know, it was a French colony or whatever was it, I don't know. So all the beautiful things of Cambodia and all the studying about Cambodia are at the Louvre and at the Musée Guimet. So I had the chance to go and study there.
And you were traveling to Asia when you were married?
Yes, because I married when I was 20 and my husband was canning tuna. So I went with him and helped him with his job. And when I was free, I could visit. I could visit Japan, and it was very important. As you have a wife, Japanese wife, it's very beautiful. I traveled I went to Koyasan, I went to Ise. I went to Kyoto, to Nara, to Miyajima. That is very beautiful. I used to speak a little bit of Japanese because I loved going with the peasants, sharing the sunshine, sunset and sunshine, both. It was very beautiful. And I learned a lot from Asian spirit. It was a great, great big experience for me that was very... Greek and Latin based. My civilization is Mediterranean. So it was very interesting, very important to know more about Japan, about India, about Cambodia. It was very important, fundamental.
And you were there post the war in Japan?
No, I'm not so old than that. I was a child during the war. Then I married in 58. So I was there in the 60s. It was the time when Japan was recovering, and it was wonderful to hear, to assist to the kendo. They were all in banks, all the samurai. They were all now retired, working in the banks. But early in the morning, they went to exercise kendo, and it was fantastic, fantastic. And it was fantastic how they were sitting. One against the others without looking at each other. And at exactly the same moment, they got up, they turned, and they began to fight. Exactly in the same moment. I don't know how they did that. Really, it was impossible for me to understand. But this is incredible. The power of the spirit is incredible. And so now, that's why I think that we are so poor in spirit now, and our civilization is destroying very quickly everything. We are all for money, for technique, and for power. That's all we want. And it's so sad that there is a big unbalance in our life. So we very, very badly need to recover what is sensibility, what is the feeling of things. So important. And that's why I hope that my foundation will have an echo and will be supported by many people. Because in my foundation, I want an old and a young for 1 month from all over the world to join another young and another old. I would love a young and an old Republican American with a young and an old Democrat American so that they can come. And without discussing, just keep their mouth closed and just hear what the nature can tell them. And they will have a lot of help and a lot of presence from us. We are not teaching anything. Nature will teach. Nature will tell the truth because everybody has its own truth. And the only problem is that they don't shut up and they don't try to find it. That's why they are so unsettled, all of them. That is my feeling. And that is the purpose of the foundation.
So you arrived at Montanitoli in 1965.
Yes. I arrived there with 9 different children. They were all very difficult. They all needed freedom and nature and good air. And there they found themselves. And in a few years, they were all very happy and they all went away very happily in their own different lives.
So some of them were adopted children and some of them were your children?
No. They were not adopted. 2 were my children. And the other 7 were difficult children that Sergio was taking care of. Sergio was a very, very great teacher.
And he was your partner?
Well, he was the teacher. I met him as the teacher of my son. But then, of course, he became my companion for 45 years. We lived together for 45 years. But the children were there. Whenever holidays were present, they came. They were not adopted. They went back to the families. But they were all difficult children. And so they found a way. And that was very important. And that is why that we always took care of difficult children in one way or the other. But he was an incredible psychologist. And he knew with little few words to touch the soul of an unsettled person. And I remember how long they stayed speaking about everything and nothing. And then these youngsters went away so happy and so released and relieved. And this is a greatness. These are riches that we don't care for. They are so important, the spirituality and the help and the sharing of each other. These are riches that nobody is taking care of because money, 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 technique, and all the rest is nothing.
You had lost a child. She died at a young age.
Yes, I lost a little girl, but she lived very shortly. But that it was because she had the problems with her heart. But this was very sad. But, you know, you have many sad things in your life, and I am sure that is grief that makes you an adult. It's not success that makes you an adult.
Do you feel that loss informed your later work with children?
No, not really, no. Because a newborn child is something very... It has a lot to do and to mean to a mother, but not to a young child, a young person, and a youngster. Have all different worlds. They are already in this world, and they are not newborn little creatures that come from eternity. So this is all another thing.
When you arrived, it's quite a big property in Tuscany.
Yes, it came bigger and bigger, little by little, yes. Because, you know, year after year, you found somebody was living, and so it became 500 acres. That means 200 hectares makes 500 acres, more or less.
There are about 60 of that is vines, right? About 60 acres or...
24 hectares. That makes how much? Maybe 100.
No, 2.3 to the acre. I think it's about 60.
Okay.
I think.
But the good thing is that it's surrounded by the woods and it's unpolluted, totally unpolluted on the top of a mountain. And this is very, very beautiful.
And how did you find it?
Well, with my grandmother's money. My grandmother left, she was a very smart person because when she died, she said, oh, you, my children, you are well off, so I must give the money to my nephews. And with the money of my grandmother, I bought the land. And so there was the place for my kids.
How did you identify that parcel, or how did she identify it? How did she find that place?
No, she didn't find it. I found it. Well, I went there because of art again.
I see.
Because Siena has been a very incredible civilization. It has been a very beautiful moment of our history, just before the Renaissance. You know, Siena was very strictly connected with Asia. and at the same time with Europe, with the communes of Europe. And the sense of mystic life was slowly broken, like spring. And so there was now the new paintings about nature. It was not only praying God and waiting for God and to earn paradise, but it's also to get and enjoy the beauties of our life, of our terrestrial life. But it was a beautiful balance between the known and the unknown.
So you're talking about like Duccio, like that?
Yes.
That kind of painter?
About Duccio, about Simona Martini, about these beautiful Madonnas with their golden back. The golden back is eternity, and the beautiful dresses are our beautiful life. You see, it was a mixture, and then they began to speak about the gospel. And in the gospel, you have the last dinner with a nice wine. You have the Annunciation with flowers. She's reading a nice book, and there are flowers there, and then maybe there is a little
bird. I like
bird.
That piece. With the winged angel?
Yes.
The martini?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that piece.
Yes. But all the incredible beauties of the Siamese virgins is incredible. And somehow, San Gimignano is part of Siena's civilization.
So that's the part of Tuscany that's closer to Siena than Florence, San Gimignano.
No, wait a minute. San Gimignano is a difficult border place because it has always been a kind of model, a passage between Florence and Siena, a passage for all the crusaders that went to Roma and then went to Asia and went to the Holy Land.
And the Knights Templar were in this area.
Of course. That's why. That's why the Knights Templars lived in San Gimignano and at Montenidoli. The Templar Knights, you know, they come from Burgundy. You know Templar Knights come from Burgundy?
I didn't know that, actually.
So Henri de Payne was the son of a Count of Champagne. At that time, you know, no television, many children. So there was the first one inherited the land. The second one went to be a bishop in the church. The third one went in chivalry or something. The fourth in the abbeys as a monk or something like that. So Henri de Payne, after the first crusade, took 8 of his friends. They didn't know what to do. They had to find their own way in life. So they went down to Jerusalem and they went to Baudouin, the King Baudouin the First. And they told him, if you give us some food and lodging, we are going to help all the pilgrims. So the King Baudouin said, okay, you can go and stay on the bottom, just in the last wing of my castle. And the last wing of the castle happened to be on the Holy Wall. You know the Holy Wall of Jerusalem?
Like the Wailing Wall? Or
the Wailing Wall. And so they were called the Templars, because the Wailing Wall was the old temple.
Oh, I see.
So they were called the Templars for that, because they were living on the wing wall of the castle that was on the temple. You see how funny is history and how things get related? But the Templars had they wanted to be very religious. So they voted themselves to the Pope. And to get a rule, Henri de Payne went to his neighbor, and his neighbor was St. Bernard. And St. Bernard was a very good drinker. He was a Burgundy man. He came from a good family of vignerons, very probably, in Burgundy. And he was at least a third or fourth child, because he was a little monk in the abbey. But he wanted something else and something more. So he got 3 or 4 or 8, I think, of his companions, and he asked to the abbey, to the, what you call it, the boss of the abbey, I don't know, what's his name, I don't remember, to go to in the land that his father was lending to him or giving to him, because it was a bad land. It was a valley of dead waters. So he called it Clairvaux. He called it Clear Waters instead of Bad Waters. And Clairvaux became the center of the world, because in 25 years, he succeeded to get 700 abbeys around the world of his monks, of the Cistercian monks. And he made a rule. But one of the reasons of such a success, I am sure, is due to wine. Because in his rule, it's written, and he is the only one to do such a wonderful thing, he said, you can drink wine as much as you need. I don't give you prescription. You have your own body. You have to decide how much wine you can drink in order to heat your heart, your mind, and your body. You see, that is was a very smart thing to do. And so the Temperance got the rule from St. Bernard. And I make a wine that is devoted to the Temperance, and on the back label, I'm sorry that you can't read it, because in the States it all comes with these terrible rules that you have. I wanted to crown the rule of St. Bernard around your prescriptions, but I was advised not to do it. Otherwise, my wine would never come back to the States anymore, because you can't say anything against law. But the law of drinking as much as you need, I don't think it's such a bad law, don't you think? American prescriptions will change with the inspiration of St. Bernard. Why not? That would be wonderful. But anyway, I'm joking. I fully respect the law and whatever is with the law.
When you arrived at Montanelli, were there vines there already?
Of course, they were abandoned, totally abandoned. Because, you know, last century was terrible for the land, because two terrible wars and all the industry took away all the peasants from the country. And the countryside was very poor. There was no water, there was no electricity. And people used to live as they did during the Middle Ages. There was no progress there. So now all people came back. They are coming back now to the country, but in a different way. The old civilization of peasants, I think it's practically lost. I had the luck to find them still some in 65. In 65, there were still many peasants around.
You learn things from them.
Yes, of course you learn, but you learn from everything. First of all, you learn from the soil. Remember, you learn from nature. You learn from the silence. You have to bend towards the earth, and then you learn. Because people think to know. They don't understand that they have to clean their minds before going to things. People always go with preventions to everything. Something has been given to them since their childhood, and this is terrible. They will never open and clear up their minds to be open-minded to things, to new things. And that's what I want to do with the foundation. They have to have no television, no Wi-Fi, no cell phones during the day. They will be allowed 1 hour in the evening. But for the rest, they have really to clean up and open themselves. Also meditation. Meditation is always something that it's teachings to you. It's not, you don't need to be taught. You need to learn. You need to learn by yourself, I think. That's the most important thing. And that's the way, also the way that I make the wines at Montanidoli. I stay 3 months before harvest. I always stay with my vines. I speak with my vines. I see how they go, what happened, what's going to happen. And then little by little, we reach harvest. And I know when to pick the grapes because I've been with them. You see? I don't need cultured people to say, this is the day, you should do this and this and this. No. I can be mistaken by myself, but the wine has to be done in the vineyards and not in the cellar. This is the big secret. Anyway, I think that life is a big experience. It's a wonderful experience. And old age gives you, you know, every moment of your life is very good, very important. And old age gives you more profoundness. You go back to your roots. Like in winter, vines, you think that they are dying, but they're not dying. They are just living life in order to go down into the roots of the soil and find themselves with what is their truth. That means the stones and the soil. This is their truth. This is the way that they will make good grapes afterwards. But to make good grapes, you must never hurt a vine. A vine is something alive. So we prune them only in winter when they sleep. We never have green prunings, never. We never or very rarely take away grapes from them. We never hurt them because they have to have their natural life. I think when I see all these vineyards properly cut up with all these tractors coming and going inside and outside, I think that these poor things are shocked by all this violence they receive. And they go on trying to make more leaves, and they have no time for the grapes because all the energy goes to make more leaves. I don't understand why these smart people don't understand such a simple truth. You know, these truths come from nature. If you just speak to a vine, she tells you what she needs. And it's not the smart people in town that will tell you what you have to do with them in the countryside. It's very funny. When I see people, especially in towns, but everywhere, they cross a plant, even a plant in a pot, and they don't see it. They move it and cross it and move the branches of this poor plant because they don't see it. It's incredible.
They knock into it. They walk into it.
Yes, they walk and they
move it, bump it.
They don't pay attention to it,
right?
Because it doesn't exist for them. I think they're very poor people because they have no feeling of nature. They don't know what is nature. What do they know? They know that money has to be there, that the job has to go on this way and that way. That, yes, of course, they will have half an hour of this, half an hour of that, the evening with that. They're going to make love with a partner, so-and-so, eat so-and-so, do so-and-so, and their life is gone with nothing. It's terrible, no profoundness, no life in all that. I think it's so many things to know, but in simple ways. Nobody is teaching you how to hear. Nobody is teaching you how to shut up and feel yourself. And how you should meditate. It's not a meditation that has to go because they taught you how to do it. Meditation is something that comes from you, from yourself. This is my belief.
So you started making wine, and your first release was 1971. And what kind of wine was that?
71 was an incredible wine because it was from abandoned grapes, abandoned vines that made little grapes. So it was a little treasure. And I made the wine in the simplest way. I had nothing. I had just a vat, and that's all I had. And what it was incredible luck is that I took these bottles to one who was the big guru of Italian wines, that was Luigi Veronelli.
Sure.
And he said that this was his true wine, and he put it at once among his best wines. And that was wonderful. And he wrote the most beautiful things about me. And after that, I went at once into the world of the important wines. But all these journalists, they all wanted money out of me. And I was telling them, you must give money to me. I'm not giving money to you.
I forgot to ask you. Sorry. I should have asked you for money. I apologize.
Yeah, I said no. You are going to pay if you want. Because I it's my life. I'm giving you my truth, my work, my life. But that, it was the big, but still now everybody is paying. If you go to my wine magazines, you can find one or two that are true winemakers. All the others are paying us, all of them. You can see always the same wines going on and on and on. Nothing is changing there. But it's very easy. It's a question of marketing. It's not a question of truth.
So your first wine was red or white?
The first wine was a true Chianti of other times. That was made out of white and red grapes, as it used to be done, because it came from the abandoned grapes of Chianti. But I went on making that kind of Chianti with white and red grapes. And then now I make also the Chianti only with red grapes. And then I make the Sangiovese, pure Sangiovese. And now, at last, I am selling in magnums, offering in magnums for the foundation, the fruit of the Triassic. The Triassic soil is up on the top of the hill, and it's a red, very rich wine that makes an incredible wine. I have
So it's a red soil where you have red vines planted.
Yes, these are the vines of the Triassic. I have also red wines coming from further down. That is on the quaternary soil. You know, the sea was coming in. And that's why in San Gimignano you can do some white, good white wine because of the marine sediments.
So a lot of times you put the white vines on the marine sediments and then the red vines on the Triassic.
No. The Triassico is now only for the foundation.
I see.
And it's very rocky. I just planted the plants. They have to find their own way. I planted some in 2002. The first grapes came in 2007. It took them 5 years to give me proper grapes. And again, I have to cover them with a net in August. Otherwise, birds will eat everything.
The birds come.
But you know, vines that give you some fruit after 5 years, that means they go very down into the rocks. And thanks to God, the rock is cavernous. That means it has holes. So the roots go down into the holes of the, and they go very deep down. You see, if you do as they do in modern times, they work a lot, the soil. They clean it all up. They take off everything. Then they add chemicals. This is not wine. What is it? This is a kind of drink, of something that has no sense. So.
You made Chianti.
I make 11 different wines. So it's very small quantities of very different wines. I make 5 reds, 5 whites, and a rosé. Only from the grapes of Vernaccia, that is the white variety of San Gimignano, local variety.
When did you start making Vernaccia?
Only later, in 1984, because I didn't feel that Tuscany was a place for white wines.
I see.
I had a great luck when I was young, because of course, in Valpolicella and Custoza, there is good white wine.
Where your family's from.
Yes. And I had a French uncle that was good, very good friend of my father. Well, it's an adopted uncle, really. And he was taking always Burgundy wines down to us. So very young, I got the taste of Burgundy wines. And funnily enough, many people say that Montenidoli wine has some Burgundy taste, especially the white.
The Corato does, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, for me,
yes,
you know,
yes,
could put it in the Cote de Bon, I think.
Yes, that is. But I love Burgundy. I have many friends in Burgundy. And I love their wines. But again, the grapes have to be local. It's no sense to I don't understand why Italy, that is such a rich land for so many different varieties of grapes, they went on into Chardonnay and Cabernet and Syrah and Merlot. They destroy the truth of our grapes. And in fact, in my brand, it's written, I am Montenidoli. I sono Montenidoli means I am Montenidoli. I am my soul. I am myself. Neither better nor worse, but I am myself. And this is what I said in 71 with my first wine. And I was speaking about terroir. Very many years before, it all spread out like a fashion, like about organic wines. My family has always been organic for 300 years. I am organic. I've always been. It's nature. It's truth. It's obvious to be organic if you want to do something serious. And I will never, never write on my labels that I am organic. I will never subdue to these stupid fashions that are now. Everybody is afraid of sulfur, but they put sulfur even into the food of children. Why they should not in the wine? The Roman people used to put sulfur in the wine. It's such an incredible, stupid madness of thinking to know something only because you learn three or four good things about wine. And so now it has to be without sulfur. It has to be organic. It has to be this. It has to be that because it was taught. Now, if you please put your nose into the wine, you will find out if it's truly organic or not. You don't have to read what it's written. You have to find out by yourself. It's always going back to the same thing. You must grow yourself to be yourself. That's all you want.
So you decided to plant Vernatra?
Yes, because when I saw the marine sediments, I said, yes, that is true. The mother is for white. But remember, the college is for the red. That's why I always call Vernatra the red of the white wines.
I see. So you feel it has red wine character, even though it's a white wine grape?
Yes, because it has not many perfumes at the beginning. It gets a bouquet with time. It needs to be aged, like the red wine. I don't agree with these Vernatra people that are selling the wine so young, because when it's young, it's a little wine, but it can improve. It's a wine that can age, that can have something, but you have to give time for that.
And it has thick skins, or?
Oh, yes, of course. We have skin contact with all our grapes. All our grapes go into skin contact, and instead of sulfur, you see, not to put a lot of sulfur, it's a question of balance, it's a question of good sense. I never use sulfur at the beginning because I use a lot of CO2 and nitrogen. I wash the musts with nitrogen and CO2 so that it doesn't get oxidized. I hate oxidation. The beginning is to kill them. You will never eat your apple oxidized, will you? If you have an apple, oxidized apple, you throw it away. You don't eat it. The same with grapes. Of course they will have other perfumes, but I feel they are not the same. All this fashion now to have the wine into, like the Greeks and the Latin, into, how do you call them,
concrete? Like clay.
In clay. Again, it's stupid. You oxidize wines. They are very richly oxidized, and so you have to put a lot of sulfur. So it's a stupid fashion. The Roman and the Greeks used to put a lot of other stuff inside. You know, the wine was how do you say, seasoned?
Sure, aromatized. They added ingredients.
Yes, many ingredients, and many of them were antioxidation.
So I see.
Yes, because they never drank a pure wine. The Greeks, up to very shortly ago, went on seasoning their wine. Now the it's gone, but they used to add some. They had I don't remember what they put, but it had another taste, a very particular taste.
Do you have a Greek heritage in your family?
No, I have. Veronese, Austrian, and Russian.
I see. Okay. So where did you get the vine material? Where did you get the Vernatra?
The Vernatra, I went around myself. I went through all the other Vernatras and chose what I liked. And then I cut my what do you call it, sarmenti.
Sure, you cut a...
The cuttings?
Yeah.
And I had them pruned, and I had them for me. So I chose the three different kinds of Vernatra. And then I was asked also to give them to somebody else. And I was asked by San Michele Alladige. You know San Michele Alladige?
Mm-hmm.
So I sent them the...
I didn't know they made a Vernatra.
No, but they wanted it. And so they had a school, I don't know, but it was many years ago.
So you make three Vernatra?
Well, yes. I make three pure Vernatra, only grapes of Vernatra. That means the first one is called the traditional Vernatra because it stays for a long time with the skins. And it begins fermentation with the skins. So it's more rustic, more peasant-like. The second one is a free-run juice that stays on the yeasts for tanks, in tanks, sure. steel tanks. Mm-hmm. And he stays on the lease for 2 years. The first year in steel, the second year in glass-lined cement. And then I have the third one that stays 4 months and stays for 12 months in the barrels. And another year to blend properly, because, you know, as soon as you have a family, they go, each of them go their own way. So all the barrels are different. And when you put them together, they have to assemble properly. And so I have 1 year in glass-lined cement.
And that's for the Corato.
That's for the Corato. Then I have Il Templare. That is made of Vernaccia, Trebbiano, and Malvasia. Trebbiano and Malvasia are the two white grapes of the Chianti. And they've always been there. And also Vernaccia has always been there. Vernaccia was there since the Etruscans. And so I thought that the Templars, you know, the Templars were all kind of monks. They had no wives. So they needed wine in the morning for the mass. But then they needed also some wine in the evening. They were all alone. They had to heat up themselves somehow. So I thought that if they made a white wine, definitely it was done with the white grapes that were local. That means Trebbiano, Malvasia, and Vernaccia. And in old wood, because they used wood for fermentations, and of course in my old barrels. That's why Il Templare is made with old barrels, fermented and stayed for 1 year in the barrels and again 1 year in the vats.
In terms of the Vernaccia, it sounds like the differences in the bottlings are what happens in the winery. But is there anything that's different in how they're grown, maybe the vine age or the parcel? Or?
Well, the Carato and also the Templare come from the best part. That means the highest. Because, you know, the wood you need to be rich, to be, in fact, there is more alcohol there. There is more extract. They are more rich. They are more complex.
So how high is that in meters?
Between 450 and 500.
That's pretty high.
Yeah. No, yeah. It begins not to be so high now because, but yes, it is the highest vines of San Gimignano, really.
I see.
Because I am up on the mountain. Monte Nedoli is the mountain just in front of San Gimignano, facing the Chianti Classico, just that mountain.
So what's higher, the white vines or the red vines?
The white vines.
I see. And is it closer to the bedrock?
Well, they go on closer, but no, they can be also underneath. They have many different vineyards. The ones that are more underneath, they go to make Fiore and Tradizionale. But Tradizionale is made with all the grapes, because all the skins go to ferment together. As I get the free-run juice.
Oh, I see. So it's Vernaccia juice, but it's skins of Malvasia and Trebbiano too?
No.
Oh, okay.
Malvasia and Trebbiano go in another side.
Okay.
Malvasia and Trebbiano go to make vin brusco.
Yeah, sure. It's good.
Yes, it's a nice one, isn't it?
I like it. I mean,
yes.
I think it's what you called it, kind of a peasant wine once, but I liked it.
You know, yes.
I like more rustic wine. So.
Yes, because whatever is truthful, in my opinion, is good. You know, I learned in Japan that everything has its own perfection. You must find it. This is very Japanese. And in my cellar, I have a beautiful statue, a Greek statue. And over the statue, it is Achilles. You know, Achilles
sure. mm-hmm.
was wounded by an arrow.
Into the heel, yeah.
Yes. So I put all arrows, but in the Japanese way, they are not going one against the other, but they are all reaching the infinite because they are uneven. And so that you have an incredible sense of peace. You know, if they go one against the other, it's war. But if they go to the infinite, it's like the samurai with kendo. When you have to hit your enemy, you don't look at him. You go to the infinite, and your hit will be incredibly stronger. That's what I learned from the kendo people. from all the samurai that were incredible to go and see Kendo, and they were still very strongly wounded by the war. You could hear the wounds in their hearts.
I think
and
that's still true today.
Because it was, now it's over. They are in
I don't know. They're, with the guys, the older guys, it's still, there's a pride thing that's hurt. There's a wounded pride.
Oh, the pride of the samurai is incredible. The tradition of the samurai is incredible, incredible. And somehow I got the hint of all this. And it was very important for my education. You know, you must go inside the feelings. And we, and what is terrible, that all our world now is somehow trying to burn everything. You know, the young people, I see from my childhood up to now, everything is burned quickly, you know, and there is, everything is changing. But what is important is to change in a better, not in the worst. But we are all getting together very quickly, I think.
So you make a Canaiolo Rosé.
Yes, my Canaiolo Rosé is coming from Canaiolo. And I was, that time I was, there was one, we tried to know better about our grapes.
I see.
So there was wine, 1 year, we were very, very attentively having Canaiolo one side, Sangiovese the other side. And while we were pumping up the must, and Sergio, my companion, was pumping up the Canaiolo. And he said, this is a perfect rosé because it's less strong than Sangiovese. It has the perfumes. It's very perfumed, and it's good to be a rosé. And since then, it was 78, I think. Yes, 78. We made a very nice rosé. And it was asked in Belgium among the table wines, because at that time they were all table wines. And in Italy, they wanted to say that also table wines could be good. By the way, the Solomon, all my best wines were table wines. And I didn't care to do better than that. It's not what it's written. It's what it's inside. It's the name of the property. You know, there is not a Chianti equal to the other, unless it is, industrially made. But if you have a wine grower, you will see that the personality and the soil of the place will give the difference. And this is the reason why I hope that the small producers will have some future in their lives. Because now everything is getting together very quickly, again. Everything is industry. But this kind of truth, I hope they will survive.
Canaiolo as a grape.
Yeah.
What's the taste like?
The taste of Canaiolo is very salty, very mineral. And as I pick it before the white, it's high acidity. And I like it to be what I call it, a Schweppes, or maybe the champagne for the poor. Because I leave it on the lees as soon as the fermentations are finished, I bottle it so that it stays very fresh. I mean, I need the freshness there. I need the to be pleasant and to be drinkable. And it is the only wine I bottle of the vintage very quickly. All the others have to wait.
So basically when the fermentation's done converting the sugar, you bottle it?
Oh, yes. January, maximum beginning February.
So in a way, it's kind of like a nouveau. It's just a rosé.
Well,
it's a free-run nouveau in a way.
Yes, of course it's a free-run juice because it's taken at once, taken away. Then, of course, all the Canaiolo goes back to the red wines. And it goes very often to the Garrulo, that is the old Chianti with white and red grapes.
Which you started making in about 89.
Well, but Garrulo, I made, 71 was, if you want, 71 was made with white and red.
Sure,
grapes,
sure. So that idea. So
but I don't remember. I must go through all my story. I don't know.
But the...
Remember, this is Japanese. Destroy your past glories. It's written in my studio. Destroy your past glories. Every year is new. Every year is something new too.
But the Garullo, which is a blend of white and red grapes in the old tradition of Chianti, is made with Toscana Governo, where you dry it and you...
No, Toscana Governo is different. Toscana Governo, you dry the grapes and then you add them for the secondary fermentation. And then the use, once upon a time, was to bottle it like a Lambrusco with the freshness of the secondary fermentation.
So do you do a wine that's informed by that?
Not now. I used to. Very popular. I made that kind of wine for a certain period. Then I don't know why, but we left that habit. But we used to pick the best grapes, let them dry, and then put them again into the wine.
It's kind of like what they do in Valpolicella. So
yes, that is the yes, but that's another. But they wait a long time. They put it in March, I think they make the real. Well, my family comes from Valpolicella, and I was born. No, I was born in Roma, but during the war, I was in Valpolicella.
Oh, I see. So they took you out of Rome, and so that's why you were spending time in the vineyards.
Well, at that time, I was 5 years old for the first time I began to get drunk with wine. Because during the war, everybody was very busy. And they asked the children to crush the grapes. You know, they put the children in the to crush, but, well, as they used to do with the feet. You know,
sure.
They used to do that. And so we were very happy crushing the grapes on the vats. But then when all the old people went away, we began to drink the juice, and the juice became wine. And so at the end, we were all deadly drunk. But that was good for our, how do you call it, anticorps for wine. But wine has been drunk in my family always. You drink wine all the time, no matter how old you are.
So you make the Garullo, and then you also make a Chianti Colli Sanessi. And what would be the difference between those two things? The Garullo is
so
usually...
Garullo has white and red grapes, and Chianti Colli Sanessi. They are both Chianti Colli Sanessi, because in the Chianti Colli Sanessi, you have the right to put also the white grapes. And the second one it's very easy. You only have four different kinds of grapes. Two reds, Sangiovese, and Canaiolo, and the two whites, Trebbiano and Malvasia. So, with the four of them, I make Il Garullo. With the two reds, I make Il Chianti, the modern Chianti. And with Sangiovese, I make Solo Montanidoli. Now, then, with the two whites, I make also Il Templare, with the free range juice, and Il Vimbrusco. Not always, I have enough.
I found that the Sono Montanidoli is a pretty dense wine. It takes some time to age.
Yes, because once they told me that I'm making a female red. So I said, you want me to have a macho, a big masculine red? You'll find me. And so I had very long fermentations. And, you know, for instance, the 2001 that was undrinkable is now very nice.
I like that one. I've had it many times, actually.
You had 2001?
Yeah, Sono Montanidoli.
Yes, but now I kept 3,000 bottles of that because I didn't sell a lot of it because a lot of people didn't like it. But it was very wise because it was also the September 11th vintage. And now I have 3,000 bottles there for the foundation. And this is very important to me because this foundation needs a lot of money. And I have 5 Magnums, 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, of only Magnums that come all from the red soil of the Triassic. And I have very little of them, 400 Magnums, you know. It's very little, 400 Magnums, out of all that property on the Triassic. And the 3,000 bottles of 2001. So this wine is very, very precious. And it has to be sold only for the foundation, to support the foundation.
And the foundation is something you started after Sergio died, kind of in his memory.
Yes, but no, it's not kind of his memory. Many people, I think we always thought to do something, to do that. And we because of the children. When the children went away, we thought now we are going to make something of that. Sergio wanted to be for children and for studying, for making research for the wine and whatever is involved with wine. I always thought also for old people, because I feel that old people are even poorer than the young. Because, you know, when you have little to live and you have lost your sense of life for many different reasons, it's very, very sad. I think this, to give a little hit of youth to an old man, a man that has no money, that is alone, that maybe is ill, to give them the truth for the future.
So you bring them to the estate, and they stay there
for one. Well, I have to build everything. I need a lot of money. I need a lot of people to help me. At least them to buy my wines that are, of course, they are more expensive. But in Burgundy, they told me that the price is very fair.
Oh, I think so. I think
no, not the usual
one. Your prices are great, though.
Yes, the prices of the market, but the ones for the foundation are much higher.
I see.
I'll give you the prices. I have them here. I'll show you.
Well,
everything.
I'll take your word for it. But
No. But you, not only you take your word, but please, you help me to tell people that they have to support this foundation and they can buy these wines they will be very happy having these wines.
So you also started making a Colorino in 2012.
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Because I didn't know anything. I knew very little about Colorino. And, of course, I was a very good friend of Giulio Gambelli. That was the one that made Montevertine.
Sure, some of the best wines I've ever had were Gambelli consulting.
Gambelli was an incredible person.
What was he like as a person?
Very simple. Very simple. Very modest. And he was giving his wisdom to everybody without asking. And many people took advantage of him, many, because he was very, very straightforward. And he had such an incredible nose. You know how I met him? It was 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, very early. I was going to Roma, and I wanted to check something, so I took my wines to the analysis, to make analysis, analysis.
Sure, like a lab.
In a lab?
Sure.
And then I saw a man there. He had a long file of a bottle of glasses of red wine, and he was tasting them. It was 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. So I asked him, may I join you? He said, if you share. Yes, I can share. And so I went on tasting with him. And it was very interesting. And then we became very good friends.
He was a good taster.
Perfect, perfect. But he was leaving the wine in the glasses or in the half bottles and tasting again and again and again. That's what I do in my cellar always.
How would he describe wine?
He?
How did he talk about it?
No. I mean, all this nonsense of perfume stories, this is a sommelier business. They have to paint in their painting. But a wine, you must get the truth of the wine. The truth of the wine is his equilibrium, his strength, his longevity. This is what is important for a wine. Then you can paint whatever you want around it. The perfumes, so many colors you can put inside. So many odors you can put inside. You leave it to the fantasy of people.
So he used to talk about a wine's balance and structure?
He didn't talk a lot. We tasted. You know, again, this is the true way to teach. You have to understand. Remember the Zen. Are you fond of Zen Buddhism?
I mean, I wouldn't think that I knew anything about it, really. But it's an appealing philosophy.
Yes. Zen is just to be together and then you understand. That's all. You don't have somebody teaching you.
So meeting him in a way led to the production of the Colorino?
No, yes, I wanted to know something of the Colorino, so I put a few rows of Colorino and I began to make Colorino. I enjoyed making Colorino. And there it was, and it was very good.
I like it. I had it recently. Yes. It was quite good, I thought. So 12 was the first year.
Yes, I think so. Yes. No, wait a minute. Well, I planted it in 2006.
I see.
So when was it? 10, maybe.
Maybe 10.
10. You know, I have a bad memory of such things. But I can tell you, I have all my papers for that.
And what's Colorino like as a grape variety?
It's very red. Very, how do you say, the grape has very good, they're very open.
I see.
Yes.
Why do you think your 100% Sangiovese is so powerful, the Sono Monte in Italy? What is it?
Well, one thing is the one upstairs on the Triassic, the one for the foundation.
Sure.
That is the soil, the place, and the roots that are going in contact with the rocks. And that is one thing. The Sono Montenidol instead comes from the best, very best grapes. You know, I pick in the vines that have maybe 2 grapes, 3 grapes, not more than that. And I select the grapes for the Sono Montenidol.
So bunches.
It is a big selection of the bunches, very careful.
So 2-3 bunches on a vine.
Oh, yes. I can have 2 or 3 bunches. You know, out of my vineyards, another person would do 4 times as much
sure.
production.
How old are those vines?
Oh, they come from 7. The first ones, what is it? After 65, I began, 68, to plant. The first ones were the abandoned ones.
Sure. Do you still have some of those?
Some, not many.
When do you start drinking your own wines? It seems like some of them are accessible right away, like the Vin Brusco, but then some need a long time, like the Corato, and then for the Red DeSono, Montanitoli needs a long time. When do you sort of approach drinking your own wines?
Well, when they're ready.
Yeah.
You need time. And then again, as they are very, you know, Montanitoli is not an easy drinking wine. Not everybody likes Montanitoli because many people are used to usual tastes. So if it doesn't taste that way, they don't like it.
I like it.
Yes, but you are a cultured person.
I've actually never had a Montanitoli wine I didn't like. And they're very different. Like the reds can be very different in style.
Yes, because they have their own personality. They are all different because they are vinified in different ways.
In terms of recent vintages, have you seen climate change? Have you seen?
Oh, an incredible. We had 3 years that have been very poor vintages, very little wines, and very, very poor, very poor.
Because of heat? Or?
Yes, because of heat. No, the first one was because of so much cold that killed
There was a frost.
The frost that
so
killed.
Yes. Got the buds out.
The buds. The second one was too much rain. Again, destroyed the buds. The flowers, they went away. And then there was heat. So the first one was heat, the second was frost, the third one was water. So 3 years, one worse than the other. This year, incredible, beautiful, incredible amount of production. And this is due...
In 14, you had a lot of production.
In 14, yes. Because we had no hail, we had no these horrible things that happened around. And as soon as it rains in our place, you have the wind that cleans up. And then again, it's the way we prune in winter. We don't have grapes one on top of the other. So they are all very separate, and they will never get moisture or very long time, and they get dry at once.
So what are some of the standout years for you over your career where you've really enjoyed a particular wine for a particular year? Are there certain wines you think, oh, the Corato was really good in that vintage? Or?
Oh, some of them were very good, yes. Some vintages are very good. But then it is always a very careful harvest. We always pick in cases, and most of our cases have holes, And so there is not a drop of juice, and it's very quickly, and they, we don't move them from one place to the other. The grapes, when they're cut, they go at once in the little case. The little case is never full, so that the grapes are perfect. They come as if they were to eat on the table. And so when they're crushed in the cellar, at once they are washed with carbon dioxide, so they're perfect. They come perfect. You know, if you want good food, you get something in your garden or something very clean, and it's perfect. And it tastes perfectly. And this is the secret of good things.
But are there specific vintages that you happen to really enjoy of your own wines? Are there particular years that you think, boy, that was one of my favorites of that particular wine, whether it be...
Well, no, they're all my children, so I always look at them very attentively. I am always very critical with them, and every year has been a good year, but my best years, funnily enough, for the Reds, 94, that usually is said to be a very bad year.
Yeah.
I may have the most wonderful wines. In white and in red, and they still have bottles that are perfect.
Why do you think it is that Vernaccia doesn't seem to have a more really high tier, very high quality producers? Why is it that it seems
because
to
Because
be
of
few?
Culture and money. As I told you, San Gimignano is a border place. San Gimignano is, you know, there are a lot of tourists coming. It has always been a border place between Florence and Siena. It has always had, as most part of Tuscany, you have a very mystical side and a very mercantile side. And somehow they live together. And you have both things. But I think that is, it's a pity, because if they really wanted the money in San Gimignano, they had to take care in another way. But now they're... Many people are copying me.
Oh, is that true? There are people doing nice things in San Gimignano?
Well, it's not that I'm doing nice things and they're not, but they are always trying to make fresh wines and sell them quickly.
That's usually what I think of, is fairly straightforward, simple wines that are sold quickly or blended with Chardonnay to give more power.
Yes,
one of
exactly.
those two things.
To get a little bit of nose, you know. They also put Gewürztraminer to have it.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, because they think that the... Well, of course, but if you want truth, the truth is the daughter of time. You know that?
So if the foundation were to succeed, what would it look like in the future? If in a few years it were as you wanted it to be, what would that be?
I want to have these people coming and going. So they have to make a lot of richness around the world, because I want also this foundation to be linked to other foundations. I want this kind of idea and of help has been a humanitarian experience that has to join people. This is the important thing. And I think the world is ready for that. We only have this attempt to go around and spread. And I would love Montenidoli to be a center for this, and the center also of culture, the center for studies, a center for about wine, about psychology, about humanity. No politics, no religions. Just try to share each other simply and get more about nature. Because we really do need to go back to nature in a more simple way.
Throughout the history of your estate, you've over time added cuvées, new bottlings, made changes. Do you foresee a new bottling in the future coming?
Well, I always feel that I don't know enough. I always feel that more age comes, and more I understand that I know very little. I think that my experience begins every year in a new way. There has never been a vintage similar to the other one. As life, really. Everything comes in. And you have so much to learn, so much to do, that I don't know. I don't think that anything new will come, really. Maybe I'll make some more wine for the foundation, maybe. But little by little, Montenegro should support the foundation and be part of it, you know? Of course, I have two children, and I hope that they will join this. They are far away, they have different jobs, but I hope that they will accept this. And this has to be done. This is not that if, it has to be. You see what I mean? This is the thing that is important.
Elisabetta Fagioli of Montenegro, she's building links to humanity through wine. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you to you. I'm very happy. Thank you.
Elisabetta Fagioli of Montenegro in Tuscany. 750 is an easy platform for discovering everything you need to find as a wholesale buyer of wine and spirits. The searches are easy to do, and they provide a wealth of information for you to determine exactly what you need to buy today. Pricing, size, characteristics, who the distributor is, the contact information, and even helpful features like easy startup of credit apps are all available for you, as well as a listing of tastings, which is something I refer to almost all the time to find out about the tastings in my neighborhood. I personally use the 750 service. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's extraordinarily helpful if you are a buyer of wine and spirits at the wholesale level, and I recommend that you waste no time in making it a part of your daily routine. 750.com, the 750 service, make it work for you.
That was our show.
If you're curious about what we're up to in the future, check us out on Facebook, give us a like, and you'll see all our fancy, fancy posts. It's I'll Drink to That, Talking Wine with Levy Dalton is a Facebook fan page. Hey, fan page. Yeah. We're on Twitter at Drink to That Pod. And we're also up on Instagram. Some pretty artistic shots sometimes. Sometimes not. Sometimes good, though. At Levy Opens Wine. And then I got to tell you, we're also got our own website there. It's alldrinktothatpod.com, where you can stream stuff off of it or download direct episodes so you don't have to go through iTunes if you don't want to. We like to give options. We're about options here. So lots to do, lots to think about. Maybe you want a T-shirt. Maybe you like a fancy, well, they're not that fancy, but they're pretty cool. I'll Drink to That T-shirt of your very own in a variety of different colors, shapes, sizes, onesies even. I mean, you can get onesies, you can get tanks, you can get biker tanks, you can get tees, you can get other stuff, hoodies, for God's sakes. It's all up there. You can find the information up on our website if you'd like to check it out and wear what you hear. And then there's also that possibility you could shoot us some real support. Shoot us a little dough. Help keep the microphones rolling. We are here because of dedication, because of love, because of interest. But we're also here because we make the finances work, and we could always use a little help with that. Thanks for your consideration.